There we go. Sound good?
Yeah, don't throw both these.
Whoa! Did you try to just create feedback? That was pretty good. You don't have to wear both. They're there for you if you want. Welcome to the Eric Lang Show, everybody. Dude, I'm so excited to have you here, Kevin.
Yeah, we're having a lot of fun.
This is great, dude. Like, we didn't really record the first part of the podcast because we were driving over here in the old M5, which was real slumming it, you know, but it was good.
You had to play Siri for directions on the way here, so
yeah.
We didn't crash, and we're here safely in my hotel room.
Together, we'd make one good Uber driver.
I have some people that might disagree with that, so you might have to do the driving.
But you seem to have a good sense of direction on the way here. It wasn't that bad.
Yeah, I do all right. My wife, she always says that. She's like, you always know, you know, where we're going. I'm like, no, I just know which direction we need to go.
Yeah.
How we get there is probably not the most efficient, but we get there.
It's kind of the job of the man, though, a little bit. Don't you feel like? I mean, maybe that's a sexist thing to say. Maybe I'm going to get a ton of shit for it, but like, I feel like that's an important thing to know.
Probably an innate ability in the man, you know, the hunter-gatherer. We go kill food, got to take it home. Where's home? That way.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Where do I bring the food to? And now it's where's the Whole Foods, right? fuck, man. I mean, I got so many questions. I wrote them all down, but like, I guess like, how are you doing? First of all, just like, I mean, how's it going? We talked a little bit in the car. Obviously, we got a little small talk out of the way, but like, I don't know. Like, how's it going?
Things are good. It's been an interesting year, some trials and tribulations at the golf game, and, you know, feel great personally. You know, my relationships, my wife and kids are blossoming, and, you know, that's most important. But, you know, as far as what people know me as a golfer, and you know, that hasn't been up to my standards, but starting to see some progress with that, and, you know, started working with Sean Foley at the U.S. Open, and really connected with him and starting to see those changes kind of progress. And, you know, it's a fun time of year. The playoffs are great. Eighth one, I think we talked about in the car, and it's gone by fast.
I didn't realize you just started working with Sean after the U.S. Open.
At the U.S. Open. I kind of interviewed three different coaches and liked what all three of them had to say, and I just kind of had to make a decision that I don't think I could have gone wrong with
right.
the guys I interviewed. And, you know, Sean and I just – we had spent some time together, like personally. We had some mutual friends, and I just felt like that was probably the safest route to go, and probably the best route for me physically moving forward.
Right. Yeah, because he's good with the with your back injury and shit.
Correct.
So, do you feel like were you going into Sunday at Carnoustie like, all right, Foley, good work, play it? Like, I mean, kind of, right?
Definitely. And he...
I mean, I was freaking out because you and I already had a podcast on the books. I was going to go to Ohio, but I couldn't go because I'm broke. And, like, I was like, oh, my God, if fucking Kevin wins this shit, I don't know what I'm going to do.
The Claret Jug would be sitting right there.
That would be sick!
But, yeah, it was fun, you know, to be in contention and felt like I had control of my emotions and my golf ball was great and was able to apply a lot of the stuff that we had worked on. Now, you know, I've talked to Sean, you know, times past, and we talked about it, and... he tells a story that someone called him from the media, said, you know, I want to do the first interview if Kevin wins. I was tied for lead on 14. And Sean's like, we're a little ahead of ourselves, but if he does win, I'll give you the first interview. You know, I like you. You're a good guy. And the guy's like, well, isn't he progressing quickly? You know, this is unbelievable. You know, you guys just started working. He's like, he's making swings that are 5s out of 10 from where he will be. So let's just give him a break and we'll see what happens. And, you know, obviously hard to hear that when I had a great event that I wasn't swinging at it that good. But, you know, it's also nice to hear that maybe my talent kind of got me through that one and has got me to where I'm at. And so maybe we can start relying on some technique here shortly.
But Foley is a patient fucking dude. Like, I mean, he is the Buddha of golf coaching. I mean, is that...
I've never seen him get angry at anything except for inanimate objects. Trackman, cell phones.
Trackman.
Stayed at his house. He got mad at his smoke alarm one time. I'm like, Sean, like, I've never even heard you raise your voice to a human. And you just punched a hole in the smoke alarm. No, but he was reacting to it.
Right.
Dramatically.
What's his house like? Is it like, is it subtle, flamboyant?
No, it's
basic.
You know, beautiful Florida home.
Right.
Lives in Kings Point there in Orlando. And
right.
Just goes around being Sean Foley and, you know, teaches lessons when he needs to, plays golf himself.
He's got a great loves little the game. Has he ever DJed for you?
He's definitely tried to broaden my horizons on the hip hop scene. I know a lot of West Coast hip hop.
Right. Because he's Canadian. He knows like Canadian hip hop.
Canadian. He loves, you know, Brooklyn hip hop.
Right.
And, you know, I'm like, okay, yeah, I've been listening to a lot of country music lately. What do you know about that?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of country.
So I went to Stagecoach.
Let me get this close to you.
So I went to Stagecoach earlier this year.
Yeah.
In Palm Desert. And it was awesome that my in-laws got me and my wife tickets to it. And then my sister-in-law came with us. And Joe, my caddy, he and his girlfriend ended up coming. So we just had a crew. Joe and I would play golf during the day. We'd go to Stagecoach at night.
Where'd you play? Madison?
No, we played at the Plantation.
Oh, okay, nice.
Joe and I actually are both members there, and so we just kind of went over there. And there's no rules. It's all men's club.
Yeah.
Nothing against women, but it's an all men's club.
Yeah, it's a funny deal with that. Like, are you just like, you wish it was different, or how do you...
I like it the way it is. It's for good reason there. They have rules, like, you know, in California, if you have an all men's club, you just can't do business there. Whoa. Or if you have an all women's club, you just can't do business there. So there's no cell phones allowed on the place. So that itself, like... You get to check out from technology for 4 hours while you're playing golf.
And literally can't open up the phone.
No phone.
That's interesting.
So that's how they passed it. You know, being a family man now, is that ideal for me? No, but it's also nice to have my own place and say, no, you can't come.
Because we're in a hotel room here. I'm looking at two beds. There's another hotel room adjoining. That's because these beds will be filled with your entire family.
So wife and kids come tomorrow. Not ideal to have two beds where the parents sleep. So it doesn't look like there'll be the old struggle snuggle this week. But the kids have a bed where they each have a bed where they'll sleep. And that's just kind of the way we do it when we get hotel rooms.
I heard you say that you drop the social media when you're not at a tournament. You just shut it down.
I tried to. You know, I just tried to be present with them. Tried to give them all I have just like I would my job. Right. And you know, I feel like social media now is part of being an entertainer, part of being a professional athlete. Like, that's how you can keep in touch with your fan base. But also,
because you're not posting pics like for your family and friends, really.
No.
You're posting it for all the people that don't know you.
Exactly. Let people see what we're doing. You know, I try to be as real as I can on there.
Yeah.
Just show me. And you know, so when I'm at home, that, you know, I need to be real for my kids and my wife. So. You know, you'll see a little bit of stuff from home, but try not to be on there too much.
Right. Yeah. It's a funny thing. Cause you know, the other night I was talking to someone and she was like, yeah, I don't really go on Instagram anymore. And I was like, I don't have that choice. Like, that is like, I don't play golf good enough as you to be able to make money. That Instagram is like my job. And it was funny to realize that, like, in a moment where I was like, oh, I didn't expect that a year or two ago, you know, we're just hanging out. You gonna say something?
We were watching, Hard Knocks the other night on TV, and there was like a segment, this lineman, he's drawn on a whiteboard, and he's trying to explain to his fellow linemen that if they just save their money, they could compound all this extra money, and by the time they retired, they wouldn't, you know, they'd be rich, right?
Right.
Which they probably all will be, but and so then he started breaking down other numbers, and so one of the outtakes was him talking about, look, if you spend 2 hours a day on Instagram for a whole year, you spent 2 months, or you spent a month on Instagram.
Whoa.
And I was like, oh, shit.
Whoa.
I should probably stay off Instagram.
That's a month?
Yeah.
2 hours a day, 365 days a year. You're right. That's 830 hours. 830 hours. That's a lot.
Yeah. So.
That's a lot.
That's where I got that little tidbit of info. But
so then you were like, I'm shutting this down.
Yeah.
This,
I'm like, as I look over at my wife, and we're both looking at Instagram or something, and we're watching it, but.
Oh, that's crazy, man.
Like I said, it's part of our lives, and
you just do it.
You need it. I need it. You know, it definitely helps with what we're both trying to do.
Right. All right. So I got a lot of questions here. Ready? Let's see here. Is it true that you change balls every time after a birdie?
Yeah. So it just, I'm not sure when it started, but I just, one day I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. And I think I was struggling mentally. And I was just like, I need something to get me excited to play. And so it was like the excitement of being able to pull a new ball after I did something good. And I was
right.
Like, I always do subtle things like that to like try and excite things, like, oh, get new grips. Like,
right, right.
Completely change the grip I'm using and just,
right.
Oh, yeah, like, this feels so good. Like, oh, I'm excited to go out and play today.
It changes so much, really. I mean, golf is so subtle and so sensitive that, like, yeah, one little thing and you're like, whoa.
Yeah, just change your attitude a little bit or change your feels and kind of light the fire on the ass and get you ready to go.
So do you carry 18 balls?
So 12's the max because I've only made 10 birdies and an eagle in a round. So okay. I'd consider that 12.
That's pretty good.
And so as soon as I beat that, then I will carry more. But
right.
At the moment, we only carry 12.
Because Joe can handle it.
Yeah, he's a big dude.
He's a big dude. I mean, he is carrying the beard, which you told me he'll shave if the Dodgers win.
Yeah, so it's like it's a double-edged sword for me. Like, need the guy to shave, but don't need the Dodgers to win the World Series.
As a Giants fan, you definitely don't need the Dodgers to win. Are you going to watch together? Do you watch games?
So last fall, when the Dodgers were in the World Series, he came to my house. My family was out of town. He came to the house, and we watched, I think it was games 3, 4, and 5 together.
Okay.
From my house, and like I'm like, Joe, like, I get it, you're a super fan, like, you will play golf during the day, you pick where you want to watch these games, like, you want to go to the bar and get blasted, we'll go to the bar and get blasted, you want to sit on my couch and order pizza, like, we'll do that, whatever you want to do. And so we had a little mixture of both, and it was, you know, I feel for him because, you know, you never want to get that close and when it's something you're so passionate about, but like I said, I'm a Giants fan, so I don't feel that bad.
Cold. Yeah, I remember I was one of my best friends, Stuart, was with me from Australia by way of Scotland. You know, and anyway, we were hanging out, and it was whatever Tuesday, Wednesday, and we thought about getting tickets for Tuesday, and then they won on game six, and we were like, oh, we definitely have to get tickets for tomorrow. And like I was just like, I'm not gonna throw down. It was like $700 for like the worst seat on planet Earth. And I was like, you know, and then luckily we didn't go because it was just the worst game for a Dodger fan.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been the best energy to be around there.
No.
Losing game seven. But
no.
Yeah, and I'm sure your couch or wherever you decided to watch it was just as comfortable. You had better views. You just didn't get the electricity at Dodger Stadium.
So we said that, you know, when we drove around in the car, we were in this M5, and I was curious to know what's the whip of Kevin Chappell. You told me it's a fine car. It's not fancy. But what is your biggest extravagance?
I'm not really a me guy. Like, I'm a more of a we person. Like, so I'm into experiences. I'm taking care of my family. We just built a house in Washington. You know, that might be our biggest extravagance. So I turned pro. It's a long story, but I turned pro.
We got time.
I bought a dog and a house, like, literally, like, weeks into turning pro. And I'm like, okay, yeah, this is what I need. I'm growing up. I'm 21 years old. I'm a professional golfer. I need a dog. Wrong. Anyway, my parents have since inherited the dog. But and I had this house. And so I get my tour card, and I have a buddy that owns a Jaguar dealership in Fresno. And he, you know, I'd go visit him or go see his office. And I'm like, oh, man, that Jaguar is sweet. And he's like, oh, you should get it. I'm like, yeah, you're right, I should. I'm a professional golfer. So $120,000 later, and now I'm 23 years old, and I got a $120,000 car. And if I just looked at a curb, I was going to hit it. I mean, this is Jaguar, and it had big 22-inch white wheels on it. And, I mean, it was a beautiful-looking car. But literally, if I looked at a curb, I was hitting it, ruining a wheel. You know, something was going wrong.
$5,000.
Yeah. And so I just called the guy. I said, can you take this thing back? Like, I'm more of a point A to point B guy. Like, I'm going to go buy an SUV. I'm going to drive over curbs. I'm going to you know, throw my clubs and dirty shoes in the back and not care about the scratches. And that's going to be me. And
you're just like a guy's guy.
Yeah. So I tried the car thing, and then I tried the watch thing, you know.
Watches are big.
They're big. And I tried to like buy one for every like milestone, you know, like win a golf tournament or, my first big check I made on tour was in San Antonio, finished second in my rookie year. And I was like, oh, I'm going to go buy myself.
What do you get for that? Like 180?
180,000?
Yeah. What's the second place check like that?
Now you're making me embarrassed. Like,
don't worry about it.
I don't want to like.
No, don't worry about it.
It was like 680.
Oh, shit. My bad.
It's okay.
Wait, why are you embarrassed? Because it's
money? Yeah, I didn't want to be like, oh, I made 680, not 180. What's wrong with you?
Dude, you're such a good guy. First of all, can we just pause for a second? You're such a good guy. Honestly, when you were like, I'm more of a wee guy, like, it hit me hard because, like, there's not enough people like that. You know what I mean? And it's so cool to be sitting here with you who's like, everyone just looks at you living the dream, you know? And, like, it's funny for me to come in and be like, M5, what's your car, Kev? And you're like, I got a Jeep. You know, like, dude, it's inspiring, man. So this is important, right? Because people are listening to this and they're thinking that all you wanted was cash and prizes, but that's not why you do it.
No, it's not why I do it. And, you know, I do it for me, but most importantly, I get to provide, for, you know, a life for my family that I think they deserve. And you know, I continue to practice every day and work out and eat right and do all those things so that I can provide that for them.
Now, but wait, you get a check for $700K. Is your mind spinning? I would be spinning. I would be like, what am I even going to do with that much money, dude? By the way, I was married to a woman who got checks that were like 7.8. And so I saw that, you know what I mean? But I didn't earn it, so it didn't mean anything to me. So, and so it must mean something for you. Like, cause it's not even about the money or whatever you spend it on. It's about recognizing the value of your skill.
Yeah, and you know, I'm fortunate to get paid well for what I do, but I am a realist in the sense of I know that this could all go away. Like, we could have made a wrong turn, gone down the wrong way on a one-way road in New Jersey, GPS, and you know, it could all be over, and I can't hit another golf ball. So, you know, I try to be real. I try to, you know, enjoy it and reward myself, and but also like have an understanding that this could be over any day.
Right.
So it's a fine line, you know, that you go back and forth on. Let me finish the story. There's actually two parts of the story.
It's a tangential podcast. Go ahead.
Okay. So, San Antonio, I'm like, I'm going to go buy a watch. So I like research the watch I want to get. It's a Raymond Wheel watch. It was like titanium with graphite bracelet. And I'm like, this thing's sick, you know. So I'm like, I'm just dating my wife at the time. And I'm like, oh, that's $5,000. I really want to spend $5,000 on this watch. And she's like, you should do it. You should do it. So I get this watch and $5,000. I'm like, yeah, it's like sick. Wear it every day for like a month. And then, you know, like doesn't come on the road with me for the next month. And so then it like out of sight, out of mind, it's like just sitting on my bathroom counter. And all of a sudden I wasn't a watch guy anymore, you know?
So yeah.
It just didn't mean that much to me. Like it was just another piece. And I'm like, yeah, it's $5,000. It just, like getting to work meant more to me, you know, right. And getting back to work. But truly the first big check I made out of college happened at Pebble Beach. I got a sponsor invite at Pebble Beach, make 200. It's the year it got rained out and Dustin Johnson won for the first time there.
Yeah.
And I was tied for sixth place going into Sunday. And it was my second or third tour start. So I'm tied for sixth place. Now I'm doing this rain dance at Monterey, like rain more, you know? I know that.
Because you're in the clubhouse.
I'm in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And we've only played 3 rounds. If it gets rained out, I get paid on 4 rounds. And it gets me into the LA Open the next week at Riviera, right. Going back to college, 1 year removed from college with God knows how much money I'm going to make, right?
Right, right.
And so. Right. So. It gets rained out. They cancel Sunday. Monday, they don't wait long. It's the forecast looks terrible. Like 8:30, you get a text, like, rain out, T6. My agent calls me. He's like, do you want to commit to play L.A.? I'm like, duh.
Yeah.
So I'll get on the Southwest to L.A. with $200,000 in my bank account.
Because you hadn't made a penny.
I hadn't made a penny. So I go straight to the college bar. And still had college teammates in school, and my college roommates are still in school in the same apartment that we
right,
were renting.
Right, because you left early, or how did you do that?
So I left in June.
Right.
Before finals were over, but I still had, like, my roommates were going to finish in 4.5 years, so they were there for their half year, and so I'd stayed with them during the tournament and played Riviera, and, you know, this was a college kid for a week again, which
was
great.
That's nuts, dude.
Those
yeah,
two stories.
I don't know. I was like pumped when I got a check for like $12,000. I was like, this is great. I was like, let's go get some shoes. I'm big into shoes.
Shoe guy.
You got to be big into shoes.
Yeah, Nike takes good care of me.
What about Nike Bucks? A lot of people were asking me about Nike Bucks. Well, I don't even know what it is, to be honest with you.
Okay, so Nike, for their athletes, they have a webpage called Nike Elite. And it's like a hidden webpage that they provide for their athletes to get gear on. And, you know, it gets... You can be given Nike dollars or Nike Elite money, and or you can negotiate into your contracts. And so, you know, it's part of your endorsement money. And so it's great. It's a good, it's an awesome web page that's gotten a lot better. Like when I was first with Nike, didn't have a back button. You couldn't refresh. Like it was just a nightmare to use. And I'm like, they clearly don't want me to spend this money, you know, but they've revamped it and it's usable and it's cool.
Yeah, I'm a big shoe guy. Are you allowed to, can you, do you, like, are you ever allowed to wear a non-Nike pair of shoes?
Sure. I do.
You do?
I got a few pairs in my bag. Are you familiar with No One System?
No, what's that?
They're LA based.
I want to see them. All right, we're back. Thanks, everybody. Now, Kevin's wearing two different pairs of shoes. I'm sad that the package didn't arrive with your onesie.
Yeah, so remembered we were doing this, and I'm like, I got to step my onesie game up. And so I ordered a dinosaur. Thing was sick. It had like sequin scales going down the back, and it was, but it was like a, what do you call like a male romper?
Rompo? I don't know.
But it was like a romper for dudes. So it was shorts and short sleeve. Like that's the thing with the onesie is it's a seasonal outfit.
Right. Yeah. What do you mean? I don't know.
Because most of them are long sleeves.
Oh,
long,
so you're hot.
Yeah. So you're going to be a little hot. But yeah. This one could be worn year round. You know?
Yeah. It's a little more flexible.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, dinosaurs, you know, we learned a lot from them, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. And I mean, who doesn't like a onesie?
Dude, I was talking to a girl the other night, and she was telling me she was into overalls.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to admit, I was kind of like, turned me on a little bit. I was like, hey, yeah, what? Overalls are kind of sexy on a chick.
I agree. Why it kind of takes me back to like eighth grade, ninth grade. You're like, oh man, that girl's wearing overalls. Like
I'm innocent again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, let's see. I got a couple more. Let's see. We got, I should have organized these in what are my favorite questions. Let's skip around here. Would you rather never, this is a fucked up question. Would you rather never have sex again, never get laid ever again, or Grand Slam? Never again. You get hand jobs, blow jobs, whatever you want. Never have sex again.
Wow.
I mean, you got to think about, you know, you got to, what's in play here is procreation, obviously.
Yeah. I have two beautiful children, one of each sex. So, you know, I got that.
You thinking three or no?
My wife is. And, hi, honey. I'm not going to have this conversation on this podcast, so you're safe.
She's going to be pissed. That is no doubt.
I think I'm going.
I mean, it's a tough one, dude. Will you sell your soul to the devil, basically?
I think I need sex.
You know what? I respect you, man.
I think I'll take my chances of winning the Grand Slam without giving it up, and let's go see how we can do.
That's a really good answer. That's a good answer. Because by the way, like, yeah, I don't know. Okay, we don't need to dissect the would you rather. You know what's funny is I don't know. Like, I sat down to dinner one night at Augusta, and I. I'm good with faces, but the guy sitting across from me is like, oh, yeah, whatever. After a little while, he introduced himself, and he's like, my name's Ted. I was like, oh, that's cool, Ted. What do you get into? What are you doing? He's like, I'm a caddy. And I was like, oh, that's cool. What do you caddy for? He's like, Bubba. And I was like, oh, right. I know who you are. And then we had a long conversation about how, I mean, you know, obviously he's an outlier, right? But like, we had a long conversation about the relationship between caddy and player. And a lot of people, when I told them you and I were going to be talking to the DA, were really interested in Joe and your relationship. For the people that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about how you guys are so tight?
Yeah, so Joe was my college teammate and college roommate's childhood best friend. Joe grew up in Valencia, and so he would come hang out with us in school. So he got to go to UCLA without ever taking a class and do all the fun things that we did. And so I just have known Joe on that level. We would play golf. He played at a community college in Valencia, and then played on the Canadian tour for a couple of years. And you know, we kept in touch after school. And he stopped playing professionally. Was working as an assistant pro, and then he started caddying for Max Homa.
Okay, yeah.
And so Max got a few starts on the PGA Tour, and so I'd hang out with Joe. You know, when he'd be caddying for Max. And Joe's that friend that you do all the stupid shit with in your life. Like
Mexico.
Yeah, whatever. In Mexico, where you go on a 3-day bender and you come home and Joe tries to get in bed with you and your wife. And you're like, Joe, like you smell like a brewery. Like we can't do this. You know, like when you're not sleeping in our bed tonight. Like right. There's another bedroom over there. You know, that's Joe. And it.
But it's just like all fun and all good.
Yeah, or he's the guy at my wedding. He was the guy at my wedding. Like before music was on, he had his shirt off. Now, not picking fun at Joe, but like I'm that guy typically at weddings too. So we're like, we're just the same guy, you know? Right. And so he started caddying for Max. Max unfortunately lost his card, and I had a longtime caddy that needed to go provide in a different way for his family, and we're still good friends. So I was really struggling to find someone, and I found a guy that worked a few events on the West Coast. We just didn't gel, and Joe was living in LA, and I'm like, Joe, come caddy at RIB for me, you know, just for this week. And so long conversations with my wife at night, like, ah, Joe's doing a good job, I think this could work. And she's like, no, we'll get divorced, you know, like, I don't know how serious you guys will take it, like, it's just too close to friends. And,
right.
And I'm like, I agree. And golf coach I was working with at the time, he was kind of saying the same thing. He had been out with us socially, and he's like, I don't know if you guys hold each other accountable, and
interesting.
And so Joe worked for me at Riviera, and I just like, no, I'm not doing this, like, or I'm not going to listen to them. I'm gonna go with my gut.
I'm doing
and so I hired Joe, and you know, that was in January or February of 2016, which was the best year I've had on tour. And then everyone that told me not to has since said, okay, you were right. And
right.
You know, and then we started doing What Would Joe Do Wednesdays.
I've seen those. They're fun.
During the pro-ams. And just, you know, he's a character, and he can, his beard makes him look a lot more intimidating than he really is. And so I like putting him in spots and say, you know, Joe, what would you do here? And, you know, just total random stuff and harmless. Right. And
because he's a player. He can kick it around.
Oh, he can kick it around. Left-handed. He's, I always say he's slappy, but every time I tell someone that, he goes and plays with them. They're like, your interpretation of his game is the worst I've ever seen. He striped it all day. I'm like, dang it.
Adidas golf shoes, y'all. My favorite pair, I'm going to go with Adipure. I like the Tour 360 knit. Yeah, the knit one. Check out what DJ's wearing and get into that, my guy. Nothing compares to a pair that I wear on the course every time I play. It's true, y'all. I don't miss not being able to wear any other golf shoe because contractually I can only wear Adidas at this point. But the truth is, I couldn't imagine a better situation. And you know what? A little behind the scenes, I went to Adidas and I was like, look, guys, let me not wear any other golf shoe ever. And they were like, yes, sir. And I was like, yes. And then my agent was like, this contract is signed. Anyway, now all I wear is Adidas and I couldn't be happier. Comfort and stability is hard to find in golf shoes, but Adidas delivers every time, quite literally every goddamn time. I've had so many friends tell me how comfortable their golf shoes are, how uncomfortable their golf shoes are, and I always tell them, buy Adidas, Boost, and my guy. Get into the Boost, y'all. Literally. It's very easy for me to talk about them because I actually like them. You can't beat Boost. It's so comfortable. So basically, Adidas golf shoes, and then they're what? There's basically Adidas golf shoes, and then there's every other brand. True facts. No comparison. Adidas golf shoes every time, my guy. You can buy a pair at your local retailer or visit adidas.com and go to the golf section. Because where else do you want to go on adidas.com? You only want to go to the golf section to buy golf shoes. Also, follow adidas.com. I'm sorry. Follow Adidas Golf on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook for all the latest news and releases. Oh, big update. All right. Thanks, y'all. Yeah, all right, everybody. Want to lose 21 pounds? A set of clubs and a bag can weigh 21 pounds, so leave your sticks at home the next time you travel. I didn't realize it was 21 pounds. Jeez. Visit clublender.com and select the clubs you want from among Callaway, TaylorMade, Titleist, and PXG. And select your dates. Not just Majul dates, folks. We're talking dates on a calendar. Clublender will deliver the clubs in a premium vessel bag. Yes, vessel. That's cool. The day before your round to any hotel, course, home, or office in California, Utah, Nevada, Arizona. California, Utah, Nevada, Arizona. If you want to rent anywhere else in the good old United States of America, give them a call and chat with them online, and they'll try to set you up with clubs. They have lefty and righty, stiff and regular, men's and women's. Better yet, the clubs come with tees, a divot repair tool, and a ball marker, and a wet almond-scented towel. I'm just kidding. It's a regular, dry, unscented towel. If you need a rangefinder, a glove, or balls, they can send them along too. Going to Vegas, San Diego, Scottsdale, Frisco. I don't know. Who's going to Frisco, guys? If you're going to Frisco, I don't know. You might just want to switch that decision up.
Just playing one or two days and don't want to lug your clubs the entire trip? That's me, y'all. Raise your hand. Clublender's got you covered. Use the code Eric Lang as a coupon code at clublender.com and get 10% off your first order. That's the code Eric Lang, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-G. That'll get you 10% off your first order. Own the experience, not the hassle. Because who likes hassles? I do not. Who likes experiences? I do. Clublender.com. Coupon code Eric Lang, E-R-I-K-L-A-N-G. That'll get you 10% off your first order.
So I was wondering, you know, because I'm coming off of an experience where it's a long story that I already went into on the podcast. But basically, I was invited to play in a money game. I'm not the best at playing for money because I'm just like, I like to have fun. And so I'm playing in this money game. And I'm playing with a caddy I don't know at like a relatively hoity-toity spot, right? And the caddy tells me, I ask him before I double the bet if my ball's in the fairway. And he says, yes, I can't see that well. Get to my ball, it's 10 feet off the fairway in a clump. And I looked at him and I was like, bro, if I'm not in the fairway, if you can't see the ball, just say you don't know. And then I'm not going to double the bet. And it turned into like a fucking nightmare. And the guy was, I mean, this is obviously an individual scenario, but what it reflects is the experience of, well, for most people listening to this, this is like people who, a majority of them haven't played with a caddy, right? And for me, there was a long time where I was like, what's that going to be like? How, I mean, obviously we know, we've heard tour players talk about playing with caddies and how important that is. But like, I mean, it's crazy, right? Like how much of an effect they actually have on your game.
Yeah, they are a big help. And
but they can also be a big detriment if you're like guys like me.
Definitely.
And they have
you just got to find the one that gels with you and right. that you connect with. I mean, I spend more time with Joe in a week than I do with my family.
You fly together.
We fly often together. You know, if my family's not out, I'm not afraid to stay with them just because we are friends.
Yeah. And you would be sharing a room and shit.
Yeah.
That's dope, absolutely. Dude.
And
just you know, like watching TV and cracking up.
Yeah. He'll have his chew spitter next to the bed and his chew spitter.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And next to the bed, and he'll be trying to find a rom-com on TV. And
I love you, man.
Yeah. And then he's got his iPad on the side watching the Dodger game, you know?
Right.
That's him. But
that sounds like fun.
He's a big help to me. He's turned himself into a fantastic caddy. And, you know, that shows just how much he wants it and wants success for me. And I don't think it's because success for me means success for him. Like, he just truly is a good guy, and he wants that for me because he knows that's what I want.
Right.
So he's turned himself into an asset as a caddy, but also he's a big asset for me in distractions. And, hey, when you get under the heat, he's like, hey, remember that time at the bar and I tripped and fell and I got kicked out? And he's like, remember, I wasn't even that drunk. I'm like, I think you just got escorted because you got overserved. It's okay.
Right.
You know, and it's
they
like,
let you out
of
the bar.
All of a sudden you're like, oh shit.
Right.
We're on the 18th hole with a chance to win. And we've just been arguing over if you were drunk or not.
Right.
You know? So
does he have a good time traveling with you? Like, cause you guys go, I mean, you know, like where's the coolest place you guys went? I'm moving the camera. Sorry. Like where did you have the most fun on tour, or was it Scotland or something like that, or Mexico?
The Scottish Open this year was awesome, despite how I played. Like, the weather was phenomenal. We stayed in Gullin,
yeah,
and just a cool city. You know, late dinners.
Yeah, you know, sun stays up forever.
Yeah, just being social and just we had a good vibe. And I honestly think that's what led into such a successful British Open is just. We set the tone early in the trip. I was trying something different. I just never have success traveling internationally.
Really?
I think because I never adapt very well.
Right.
I always travel late, last minute. I'm like, I don't know if I want to be here.
You're out of sync.
Yeah, you get out of sync. And all of a sudden, at the British Open, typically I find form like Friday afternoon. And you're like, oh, man, I got to make a run to make the cut. And
you're like, I got 8 holes to play.
Yeah.
And
so the goal this year was like, all right, let's go play the Scottish, have some fun, maybe play a little side golf. Right. Which
did
we did.
You?
We
you got
didn't.
Out, right?
We didn't end up playing side golf. He did, and then I got to walk down North Berwick every day to go to dinner, and I was like, wow, this is unbelievable.
That's a crazy course, huh?
But it just I think that energy and like how much fun we had there really kind of bled over into the Open Championship.
How did you see a difference between fans over there and fans over here?
I just
A lot of UK listeners.
Okay, the first word that comes to mind is educated.
Whoa.
I don't mean book smart, or I don't mean to disrespect by it, but it's just they understand where the ball is supposed to go and how the ball is supposed to get there.
Interesting.
And so, you know, a shot that's played in the air and with spin, they might not clap for, or clap as loudly for, and a shot that's played on the ground and released, you know, back to the hole, they're big fans of, because that's, you know, the stereotypical way to play the shot.
They want to see you play links golf.
Yeah. And, you know, you see that a little bit at Augusta as well. Like, you get away with a shot, you use a slope that you're not supposed to use, and they're like, you cheeky guy, you got away with that one. And, you know, you use the slope you're supposed to use, and they go crazy.
Really? So cool.
That would be my observation.
So cool. I mean, dude, no one will get to experience things like that. That's a very unique experience that, I don't know, that I'm so, I feel so, like, that's so interesting to hear. I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, I mean, I was fortunate enough to play with Jordan Spieth on Saturday at the Open. And, I mean, we're both playing well and playing good. I mean, he's getting a standing ovation on every green, and I'm, like, the kid with my hat off and, like, acknowledging him. And like, oh, thank you, yeah. But, I know that they're there for him, but it's like, man, you're getting goosebumps every green. You're like,
really?
Yeah, they get it. Like,
really?
This is their champion right now. Like, he's defending his title, and we're making a run at it.
And he's an American.
Yeah.
That's a really cool thing, too.
Absolutely.
Golf really it transcends nations.
For sure.
You kind of live an adventure in golf, it sounds like, especially with Joe, right? You just like, I don't know, man, it's just so rad to me.
I mean, it's much fun. Like, my success parallels how much fun I'm having. And so, you know, often the first thing I do when I'm not going in the direction I want to is like, are you really enjoying it? And often the answer is probably not as much as I can. And, you know, try to turn that around.
What is there any specific thing you do? Do you like play cards? I mean, what do you do?
To enjoy it more.
Yeah, to increase that, like, barometer.
You know, like, things like coming up with, a ball only has one birdie in it.
It's right.
Like, you know, he gets excited to give me a new ball, you know? Or, like, this is bad, but I don't have an equipment deal. And so, like, I might get bored. And, you know, we're so fortunate on the PGA Tour to have all these equipment trailers out here. And I might go try a wedge and say, man, like, this is going to get me excited. Or
why don't you have an equipment deal?
Because I'm with Nike, and I had a deal with them. And when they got out of the equipment industry, I just said, I don't know that I want to do that. Like, I'm going to play what I want to play. And until I find 14 clubs that I think are the best for me, I'm not going to do anything.
One of the questions we got was, what was it like for you to go through that Nike situation last year?
It was interesting.
Cause you must've found out a little bit early.
No. So we all found out the same day. It was like August 3rd. It was 2016.
You got a phone call. Text, email,
How did we find out? I think it started spreading. Some of the higher-ups at Nike Golf just randomly showed up, like, on a Wednesday.
Hmm.
And it's like, that's not normal. Usually they're here, like, Monday through Wednesday. And so, it's like, you started hearing grumblings, and someone maybe heard first, and then they told a player. Like, maybe someone's agent heard first, and they told another player, that player told me, and da-da-da. So I'm starting, like, looking it up online. You can't find anything. I'm texting people, like,
because what's your feeling at that point? What do you know about, like, this? Your feeling is WTF.
Yeah, you're kind of feeling, like, abandoned. And, like, what does this mean? And because you're hearing details of Nike getting out of hard goods, but you're like, what does this mean for me? And, you know, someone will say, well, they're releasing us all of our contracts. And you're like, well, is that true? Like, are they really? Or
not true.
Is there going to be a fine if I don't play the Nike stuff, like, today in Hartford or tomorrow in Hartford, you know? So you start getting the details. And, you know, at first I just felt for the people that I had relationships that worked there that lost their jobs, you know? Because not only did they get rid of hard goods, but they cut, you know, so many jobs.
Hundreds.
And, you know, a business decision, probably the right thing for them. But more, you know, a person that has morals is like, I don't know that, you know, you just hurt all these people. Like, let's... Yeah. Why don't we give it a year, you know, and see? But, you know, it's about finance, and they did what was best for them.
So
what I originally did was I went to every club company and said, if you want me to play your stuff, send me some stuff, I'll try it. And I had one club builder build everything, just because it's not apples to apples. Like, if you and I went and said, make us a 7-iron, we want these specs, we went to Mizuno, TaylorMade, Titleist, and
Callaway,
it would all come back close, but a little different.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted all my stuff to be built on one machine. And then I was getting a true apples to apples test.
Right.
And I tested a lot of stuff, and I always seemed to go back to my Nike stuff.
Amazing.
So I'm still playing Nike irons. I play Titleist wedges, Titleist putter, Titleist ball, TaylorMade woods.
Right.
And
Rory say something like, yeah, at every pro-am, I was the only one playing Nike clubs or something like that. That was weird to hear because, like you, dude, I don't even – I've had Nike clubs. I had a Nike driver that I loved. Now, obviously, they're not even known for their drivers, but I just love the sound. But anyway, I was bummed when they stopped making shit. And I was like, oh, man, we had a friend that we lost.
It's just weird. I mean, it's changed the whole the market of golf, and you know, you lose a name. And so, you know, when you walk down the range, I mean, you're out there today, it's like it, even though it's only one equipment company, it just feels so much more limited to what you can play.
Yeah.
That'd be my observation of it.
Do you have some sticks stacked up, hidden away?
So, I just got a fresh set. Some guys that worked for Nike Golf at the Oven, they started another company called Artisan Golf.
Oh.
And Patrick Reed won the Masters playing a couple of their wedges. And right now they're a wedge putter company. They'll eventually make irons. And they are still based in the Oven, or what was the Oven.
Right.
And they had a few extra sets in there. And so I called them and said, hey, can you help me out? And
right.
So I sent them the ones I was playing. And then they sent me those back and had the specs on them and said, this is what we want to do. So right. I did it. And actually, my short irons have someone else's initials on them because they belong to someone else. They were like, get ready to go to someone else. So they say MT on them. My right. short irons, 7, 8, 9. So
that's great.
That's the last new set I have. I have a few like slightly worn sets or slightly different sets. But I think it's probably time for me to grow up and find something else.
I mean, I don't know. Like, whatever. Who cares? I mean, if you hit it on the club face, if you hit the right groove. Patrick Reed, he gets a lot of shit. You know him well? What's the deal?
I don't know Pat well. You know, we obviously spent a lot of time at the President's Cup last year and got to know he and his wife or fairly well and spent a lot of time with him. But, you know, he beats to his own drum. I respect that. You know, he found what works for him, and not going to let anyone get in the way of that.
Dude, I have... I ran into him at Kapalua, and you know how the range is like a mile.
Yeah.
And he literally looked at me. I had all this gear, and he's like, "You want to ride?" And I was like, "Fucking, there's 30 players here. I'm gonna guess 3 are gonna give me a ride." You know. And I was just like, "This guy's good. This guy's a good guy." And so then he gets all this shit, and I'm just like, "Hey, guess what? I don't know him, and no one else does." And I just feel so weird about that sometimes.
Yeah, I'd say there's a lot of guys out here that. If there's someone that has controversy around them, you know, maybe a Patrick Reed or like Bubba Watson had it a few years ago, or even an Ian Poulter, it's like they're probably just a little bit misunderstood.
Yeah.
Yeah, we all have our quirks, and you catch us in the wrong wavelength and we're going to react in a negative way, but that's everyone. I mean, that's right. Road rage. That's the person yelling at the cash register at the grocery store. I mean, we all go through the ebbs and flows.
Right.
And you know, those guys just happen to do it on national television or, you know, on a national stage, and they get grief for it for a long time.
Do you, on Instagram, do you follow any golf accounts?
Yeah, I follow a lot of golfers.
Do you follow PGA memes?
I just recently seen that. Yeah. Pretty funny.
They give Pultz and Reed a bunch of shit. And actually, they were giving Smiley a bunch of shit.
Yeah, and I saw
him. And he apologized.
Yeah, the guy
Travis, apologized. Good guy. Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, he cracks me up. Like, some of them are hilarious. And he posted one of you in the onesie today, and I was like, good. So I told him we were coming out here. But it's like my favorite one. I fucking love that guy. Speaking of President's Cup, in hindsight, could you have gotten up and down, you think, from the TV tower?
It would have been brutal. I think I was more trying to prove my point. I was probably going through one of those lows in the wavelength, and I'm like, I can hit this shot, but you won't let me move this rope? Come on, man.
Right.
What's going on?
Right.
This guy could have been up here tying this, and while we were playing, how do you know this hasn't changed? That was trying to be my point. He's like, no, right. The tower has to stay as it is. I'm like, well, how do you know it stayed as it is all day? Like, this guy could have...
Right.
I mean, what do you do when you're bored?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
Fiddle with things. Yeah. And yeah, that was interesting. I'll never forget the conversation Joe and Jim Furyk had. Jim Furyk's on the tee with us. You know, he's a captain, or he's the assistant captain, and he's like, clubs you guys hit? And I think it was, Joe's like, we hit 9-iron. He's like, where'd you have the wind? He's like, in off the left. And we look up and there's like a flag on top of the tire. And it's like down off the right. Like it literally switched like as I touched it. And Jim's like, okay, I won't tell anyone that. Right. Like that's not going to be helpful for anyone else.
Speaking of Furyk, man, who's your hero out there? Like you got to have a guy you look to.
That's a good question. You know, I think Jim has gotten the most out of a career that for a guy that had the least, you know, like so impressive.
Yeah.
I think everyone would look up to him mentally. You know, I think even, you know, guys like Tiger that have such strong mental games, even would look up to Jim for what he's done, with what he's had. I was a big Greg Norman guy growing up. Okay. Like just loved the way he played the game, loved his style, loved, how he hit it. And, he's been great to me in my career. I was fortunate to win one of the events that he, his management company runs. Yeah. And so I got to know him and get texts from him all the time. And, so that hero has kind of lived up to, or that golfing idol has lived up to everything that I thought he was for sure.
Yeah. They say like not to meet your heroes or something like that.
I definitely had a bucket list day today, like randomly
today.
Yeah. So I go out and I'm not in the pro-am tomorrow and I'm like, I'm going to play 18 holes. So Joe and I have a session with Foles, go to the tee, and there's Kevin Na and Ben On are on the tee, and they're like waiting on a group in front of us, and they're like literally hitting it as I walk up, and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna join them, da, 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 and Joe was like grabbing a pin sheet or something, so he wasn't quite on the tee yet, so it didn't look as awkward as I'm describing it, and I'm like, you guys go ahead, and Zach Johnson walks up, and I'm like, Zach, who do you have? And he's like, oh, I got Tiger. I was like, okay, yeah, I'll just play with you guys. And he's like, cool. And so, you know, I know them both fairly well, and they've both been great to me, but it's still like Zach Johnson, Tiger Woods. Like, cool. Like, so we play the first 8 holes, and they're like, oh, we're going to jump over to 15. Why don't you come with us? I was like, no, I'm not the pro-am. I got to keep playing. I'm going to play them all today. And they're like, all right, man, I'll have a good week. And so I hit my tee shot on 8 or on 9 by myself, get on 10 tee, Phil Mickelson, John Rahm. So I played 18 holes today with two of the best to ever live. And
was it the first time you'd played with Tiger? I mean, I feel like you played with him before.
I played with Tiger at Liberty National in 12 in a tournament, but it's still just like...
Different.
Even as a pro, like, you know, it's like, that's Tiger Woods, and like, he's in his prime, and he's... Or he's coming back from his prime.
He's priming.
And, yeah.
He's getting primed.
And, you know, it's just like an honor to be around him, and...
What'd you talk about?
We talked golf. You know, he hit a shot on 2 and he like lipped it out, the par 3, like lipped out from 180 yards. And I'm like, oh, Stella got a groove back, huh? And he's like, yeah, I found my swing. I'm like, sick, dude.
You literally had a conversation that everyone has.
Yeah.
I found my swing is what he said.
Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you hit some shots at the PGA. And he's like, I know. And then he went on to say, like, yeah, Brooks just played so good and couldn't make up any ground. And I'm like, yeah, I didn't watch much of it, but I saw some of the highlights. And you know, it was pretty impressive what you guys were doing.
Dude, it's literally like, it's just like normal.
Yeah.
And you must be in this moment like, ha, ah, what the fuck is going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, we did talk a little bit about technology, and I don't know much about it, but he started talking about how he struggled with his 2-iron, and that's why he's like, oh, I really struggled with my 2-iron at the PGA. Like, think it cost me a few shots. And I'm like, oh, yeah, but, you know, what are you doing about it? You know, like, did you make a change? He's like, yeah, I went back to more like a traditional blade. You know, I think the center of gravity on the...
Oh, because he had that HL thing. Yeah. Yeah.
He's like, the center of gravity on the driving iron was too far back, so I was trying to kick it in the air, and I'm trying to hit these low stingers, and I'm trying to lean the shaft so far left, and causes the ball to go too far right. I'm like, seems like it makes sense to me.
Like, okay, Einstein.
Yeah, now if I went and told that to Bryson would say, like, technically, no, not true. Not true. And yeah. So, you know, definitely, like, in that moment of that conversation with Tiger, I'm like, sure, I believe what you're saying because you're Tiger Woods, and right. I'm not going to research it, and I really don't care, but it is interesting that you changed 2-irons this week. Maybe I can learn something from it.
Yeah. That's fucking crazy, dude. Did Phil want to play you for money?
No, there was no gambling. Phil seemed a little lethargic today. He's like, oh, I had a lot of stuff going on. I had to do a clinic, and then I went and hit some balls, and he's like, I forgot to eat. He's like, get anything in your bag? And
he forgot to eat.
That's what he said. He's like, I'm just so tired out here. He's like, it's not. And he made a few fat jokes at himself, and as Phil does. And
I mean, because I guess he's got a lot of clients in town, like Barclays.
Barclays, shit, KPMG.
Some of these questions suck. Most embarrassing thing on a golf course ever happened? I mean,
I've definitely hit a few people. That's never like a great feeling.
It's gotta suck.
2012 or 13. I was at the Wyndham, last event before the playoffs. It's like on the verge of getting in the playoffs or not, and just had a meltdown on a practice round. And I was in the process of having a meltdown. And I hit a shot like right of the green and just gave it like a fun toss, like not an angry toss,
right?
Like it wasn't like raging and like fun toss.
The driver.
It was like a 4-iron, like okay. Par 3. Bounces, like jumps across the cart path, like hits this group of guys that are drinking beers, and I'm like, oh god, can this get worse?
I can't even throw my club properly.
Yeah.
JT throws a lot of clubs.
Yeah.
He's a club drop.
Club drop.
Club drop. That's a new one. The club drop didn't exist 10 years ago.
Okay.
All the right? I mean, would you grow up watching TV and see a club drop ever?
No, that's a good I've never thought of it that way.
I wonder who invented the club drop.
Maybe it's JT. Maybe we should JT. Give him like some... Tiger invented the club twirl. I caught a lot of grief recently about that.
Why?
I was watching his event, the National or what in DC, right over the 4th or near the 4th of July, and Tiger club twirled and his ball lands on the left edge of the fairway. It was an iron, like a 4-iron layup hole. Club twirls, ball lands on the left edge of the fairway and goes in the rough, and it's like literally a foot from the hazard.
Right.
Maybe a narrow hole, but it's a 4-iron. Like, I know when I hit a 4-iron, if it's a good shot or not. But he went club twirl. Like, he just – and so my question was, like, I just don't understand it. Can someone explain the club twirl miss fairway?
Yeah.
And I just caught grief from all these Tiger fans.
Yeah.
And it was no bash at it. I'm not a twirler. And, like, I just kind of – I'm a pick my tee up and walk over the bag kind of guy. And so I just don't understand it. But I truly – the best answer I got, or what my hypothesis is he just has that much swagger that he just does what he wants and it doesn't matter. Like, no matter where it's going.
Why didn't you ask him today?
I should have. You're right.
Because it seems like my perception was is he thought it was better than it was. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
For sure that's the case. But it's like, it's a 4-iron and the hole's 30 yards.
It's a 4-iron layup.
It's a 30-yard wide layup hole. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I want to see a 6-iron to 2 feet.
Yeah, then club twirl.
Yeah.
And put it in between your legs and run around with your hands in the air.
I want to see a driver going like 410.
Yeah.
To twirl.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a twirler. I'm more of, you know what I'll do is I'm not a twirler, so I'll just, if I hit a good shot, I just let it slide.
Slide. Oh, yeah.
I just let it slide while I pose.
Okay.
It's also douchey, but you know, whatever. Let's see. Hey, do you ever, in practice rounds, do you play a second ball sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay.
It's more about comfort level. So yeah. I'm fortunate. I've been to a lot of these venues a few times. And so you kind of know what tees going into the practice round you need to get comfortable on and need to like revise your sight lines.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of times I'll hit a tee shot and miss the fairway and not hit another ball because I'm like, oh, it wasn't that I wasn't comfortable with the line. It was more I just didn't execute.
Right.
So, like, I'm okay with that.
I'll play that shot.
Yeah, I'll go play that. We'll figure it out. But, you know, you get on a tee. Let me give you an example. Like when they redid 12 at TPC Sawgrass.
Yeah.
So kind of a
They turned it into a drivable.
Drivable hole.
Yeah.
Water left and
kind
of a little bit of a bank up the right. And it's like, where do you hit it? And, like, for the life of me, I cannot lay up in that fairway. Like, I've played eight.
Like you just like, what would you do with your six, or would you?
I've played 8 rounds there. I've laid up twice in the left bunker, and so then the last 6 rounds, I've hit it at the green because I just can't lay it up. It's like
right.
But so, you know, next year when I get there, I'll get on that tee and be like, okay, like how do I want to play this hole?
Right.
If I want to lay up, like what is the true sight line and why am I hitting this club? And,
right.
And let's get comfortable with it. And
do you ever imagine you're somewhere else? Like, imagine the hole is different in order to hit the shot you want to hit.
I mean, it's not something like I would say I do on the regular, but I do a lot of things to trick myself to not do things, right? So, like, a right-to-left hole, you always get on it, and you're like, oh, I got to draw this.
Right.
But if you know that, like, left's dead, I'll tee it up on the right tee marker,
right.
Which is the opposite of what I would typically do.
Right.
And force myself to hit a straight shot to a cut shot, take away my angle so that I don't hit it over the, into the trouble.
One of the biggest strategies to playing golf the way you do when it's stroke play is you really just you look at the course and you're looking at the bright red no go.
Yeah.
And you want to play to the green or the blue.
Correct.
You're not. It's because I think a lot of us, me, we go out and we're just like balls to the wall. You know, like I'm gonna hit it as hard as I can, and say the trouble's no problem.
I'd say golf's changing. And how, our golfers are changing how we look at it. There's so much more analytics to it, and yeah. and there's so much more data for us to use to our advantage. And it's like, so Joe and I can get the spray charts from the last time we were here and see where every bogey was made from.
Whoa.
And so it's like, okay. Like,
they call that a spray chart, well, number a, one? I love that.
That's the best. That was the best way I could describe it for you.
Yeah.
So we can see that a hole that you guys will see this week that, okay, there's a drivable hole that is now number 12.
Right.
Where Phil kept hitting the grandstand last time we were here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, left is no good.
Right.
Like, if you hit it in the left greenside bunkers, you're likely going to make four. It's a drivable hole. If you hit it in there in one, right. you're likely going to make four. If you hit it in the right greenside bunkers, you have a chance to make a birdie.
Right.
So, if you're going to go at the green, like, you're always erring right.
Right.
And so, like, we know that. We have access to it.
I love how lean your golf games are. You know what I mean? I love how it's just like, because for me, I'm like, I just would like to make a par. I don't want to make a bogey. so many good questions here. You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over to, I got like some screenshots. You know, yeah, let's see here. Thanks everybody for your questions. We're going to dive into these now. Yeah, I could be more organized. That's true. I know what you're thinking. what the fuck? All these photos. Jeez. Okay, here we go. Here we go. Favorite adult beverage. We can just go quick because we've been on here a while. Favorite adult beverage.
Tequila soda.
Okay. All right. Favorite golf course he likes to play for fun.
Riviera.
Ooh. Do you? Yeah. Okay. I got these. I'm not going to ask you dream foursome. I mean, unless you want to answer it. Do you like to answer those questions? You don't have to. You're wincing. Don't do it.
Okay. Perfect.
Tiger, Phil. Okay. what is your favorite Nike golf club? That's a good question. What is your favorite club right now from Nike?
My MM Proto irons that I'm still playing.
Okay, cool. So the set. Biggest benefit from working with Foley?
The psychoanalyzing.
Yeah, because he's a
spiritual man.
Spiritual dude.
Yeah, and he's well-read, he's well-educated, and he'll tell you none of his stuff's original. None of his stuff's his. Like he's learned it from someone else, and he's applied, you know, other lessons to whoever taught him, and he's just trying to use those to help you.
Right.
And so, you know, that's been – he's taught me a lot about why I react the way I do to things. He's taught me about, you know, different ways to think when in certain situations. And, you know, I think that's been the biggest benefit for me in my career.
That's awesome. He's such a good guy. okay, I covered a lot of these. Oh, this is a good one. Would you rather have a toothpick under your nail and kick a wall, under your toenail and kick a wall, or have paper cuts all over your body and jump into a pool of lemonade?
I'm going paper cuts, jumping into a pool of lemonade because at least I get a little enjoyment out of the lemonade I can drink on my way down.
We want more Joe the Caddy. Give the people what they want. As a comment, would you rather? I got something in my throat. Would you rather hit every drive down the middle, or hole every 15 footer?
Hole every 15 footer.
I figured you were gonna say that. I should screen these questions better.
But all the stats say that you don't drive for. What is it?
You don't drive for show.
You don't drive for show.
Really?
Well, if you look at the money list, the top 10 putters aren't necessarily the top 10 earners. But if you looked at the top 10 earners, they are very similar in top 10
in distance and accuracy. Ball
striking. Yeah.
Fuck. So now we go get like a 0-degree driver. Put some cooking oil on it. But have you ever done that?
You can play grease golf. Like you put chapstick on it, and
that could be your thing. That could be your brand.
Next time you gamble, you gotta ask if you guys are greasing or not.
Oh,
because a grease gambling game is a little different.
Like, you put a little grease on the head of the driver.
On the head of the driver, and you send it.
20 more yards.
So now a three handicaps is zero because he's driving it. And but you literally no can't hit it offline. Yeah.
No side spin.
No.
I got to try that for fun. I'm on the brink. This is a good one, man. I'm on the brink of getting into the 30s, I'm assuming, on the front or the back nine. But my, or maybe it's his 80s. I don't know. But my, it doesn't matter. It's all relative. But my nerves get the best of me every time. Any tips to help to take control of that?
Yeah. So something I think we can all learn is like, what journey did you set off when you played the first hole? So were you going to play an, was it an 18 hole match? Is it a 9 hole match? What, or 9 hole round? Whatever it is. And every shot from the first one you hit to the last one you hit all equals one. So it's not about where you think you're going to be. It's not about, oh, I'm 2 over par through 7, and if I only make one more bogey, it's, you know, I'm going to shoot in the 30s. It's no, it's about I'm just going to hit each shot the best I can and add them up at the end, whether it's the tap in at the end or the first one of the first tee shot, they all mean the same.
Right.
They all mean one. I was talking to Tiger Woods about that today, actually. I was like, man, do you ever notice that? Like, I was doing some drills, and Joe's like, he throws a ball on the lip of a bunker, and I hit this great bunker shot, and it goes out, and he's like, why is it the harder that it is, the more, like, you, like, the better you do, you know? And I'm like, I don't know, I just kind of focus in. I was like, Tiger, do you ever notice that? Like, you know, the easy shots you, that you might take for granted, or you might, like, your lack of focus might go or pop up, and you make a bogey from there, but then you get it up and down off Frankenstein's fat foot over there, and he's like, you know, my dad used to say, just suck it up. And I was like, okay, yeah, I guess I get it. Like, just, you know, just keep going. He's like, yeah, every shot equals the same, one. I'm like, all right, you're right.
I'm freaking out. I can't actually believe you played with Tiger today. Like, and he just was, like, telling you thoughts about old man Woods.
He's very approachable.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Which is awesome. I think it's great for the game. It's great for the future of the game because you're going to see him mentor young guys, mentor guys on tour, and really have an impact in a way that he hasn't typically had an impact.
Yeah. Sounds like he's getting more into the Wii.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's crazy, man. What do you do to prep for a tournament 3 to 4 days before, and how do you practice for it?
So I guess that'd be like, what did I do when I was home this last week to prep for the Northern Trust? So I knew what I would be getting ready for. I knew I'd been here before, so needed to find some rough to hit pitches out of and have an understanding of a game plan going into it. So, you know, it's a rye bluegrass blend here. It can be real thick, and so you got to get comfortable hitting shots hard that aren't going to go very far.
Right.
So, you know, when you're at home, you give yourself the worst lie you can and just get comfortable like making a bigger swing than you want to and seeing how far it's going to go. And then you come here and like, all right, how did I do? I probably could have done a better job last week if I'm being completely honest, but you know, that's what the practice rounds are for.
Right.
Often I'll mess with setup, go into the Open Championship. Everyone says you got to hit it low, So, you know, find a driving iron or a 2 iron that you think is going to work for over there. Often, you know, you don't have something, like for me, I didn't have a driving iron that was going to work because it was so fast there.
Right.
So, you know, you got to have something altered while I was there. But, you know, I started hitting that in the weeks leading up. So when I got over there, I wasn't uncomfortable looking down at something I hadn't been seeing.
Right. So you're literally just like, how do I mess with this course, this grass? That's cool. I mean, it totally makes sense, but it didn't occur to me.
You know, you get Bermuda, you know, we leave the West Coast and you start preparing for chip out of Bermuda. You got to go find some dicey lies or lies that appear to be very grainy so that you can get comfortable. All right, this ball's there's going to be a divot on this 10-yard pitch shot I'm about to hit, you know, and so you just got to get comfortable not freaking out when the club goes through the turf and be like, oh, what just happened? What did I do?
And
like,
blade
no,
it.
That's the grass. It's right. Okay.
Yeah, that would definitely freak me out. This is a good question. If you had a chance to live a completely different lifestyle, what would you have changed, if anything? I don't even understand the question entirely, but it sounds like...
If I could live in a different way, or if I could be doing something different?
Yeah, I guess.
I guess I'm a talker. I enjoy talking.
Yeah, you're very good at conversation.
And so, you know, something where I could use that to my strengths. I mean, maybe a lawyer. I'm not a big one for authority, but you know, that maybe education,
right?
Something down the where I could use that and apply it.
Interesting.
That's a great question.
I think we're good. I think we're good, man. I'm pretty pumped. Let me see if I got any more. I mean, I feel bad. I've taken a lot of your time, dude. I mean, you got your wedge in here. You're going to do some practice with a wedge in the hotel room?
Yeah.
What's going on?
So you just got to get your reps in. It's a very safe environment. So I don't have to see if I don't do it right, I don't have to see a ball go flying sideways. So
you're not, there's no ball.
No ball. I might just put it down. I'm not going to hit it, but I might put it down from like my sight lines, but I'm just going to, you know, try to take my fields that I'm working on to the extreme here, and then hopefully when I go to the golf course, they fall somewhere between the extreme and where the bad feels.
Oh, you're talking full swing.
Yeah.
What are your feels? What's the feel now that you're trying to?
Just trying to get the club a little more in front of me, a little more. We call it on its side. So the club was getting steep, and
you want to come when you're coming in. You want to lay it down.
Yeah, on the way back.
On the way back.
I want to lay it down so the club just stays there, and then I can just turn.
Right.
So I was historically short and kind of across the line, which is a no-no, and so you have to throw the club behind you.
Right.
And then that tends to jar your back because you have to adjust to the mass. And so that's kind of where I believe some of my back issues were coming from.
So if you take it back the same way you want to take it down, this is a little bit smoother.
Yep.
Interesting.
A lot easier.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, dude, we could talk for hours, so let's just shut this shit down.
We can just do it again if you need more.
Have you ever had a hole-in-one with nobody watching?
I've made a hole worse. I had a hole-in-one playing two-ball worst ball.
So you didn't even play it?
It didn't count.
What was your other shot?
Miss a green bogey.
Oh, man. Dude, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate it, Kev. You're a legend.
That was a blast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Everybody, thanks for listening. Have a great week.